Sure. I liked it. I liked it all like fresh like that last time.
Fresh. Like an avocado.
Right. Hey, it is Tuesday the 17th of January. Jesus, it's flying by already.
Indeed
17
it is.
Days in. Well, yeah. It's good because, you know, a few more days and it's going to start dragging. So it is on taking pictures. It is photography. It is gear, a little bit of gear, a little bit of theory, a little bit of practice, a little bit of nonsense.
A little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll.
Right. Oh. So wait, who would I, be Donnie or would I be Marie? Anyway.
You could be both of them as far as I'm concerned.
Ooh. All right. So Bill Wadman's in Brooklyn. I'm Jeffrey. I'm in Silver Spring, just north of the Capitol, where in a few days,
96 hours or so,
hundreds of
people.
Supporters and thousands of protesters will descend on the city.
Probably.
Yeah, it's weird, you know, it's because the mall is all blocked off
already.
And oh yeah, there are fences everywhere. For weeks now, they've been building the viewing
the
platforms
barricades
and stuff in front of the, in front of, but are they keeping people out or keeping them in?
Can never tell.
In front of the White House, you can't, you know, the Lafayette Park right there where
sure.
The, what's the name of that street that you used to be able to drive on? Remember that we walked on to get to the, like the Renwick and stuff?
Right. It's the same street that the Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right. That one. So that's all blocked off and,
okay.
And there are big, like bleachers and like, almost like boxes that you would see at like a sporting arena.
Right, sure.
You know,
yeah.
Viewing boxes kind of thing. That's all been blocked off for a long time. The you know, around the memorial, Lincoln is all, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing actually that they put this stuff together. You know, what's actually interesting too is 4 years between inaugurations is enough time for things to change in the way that it's covered from
mm-hmm.
from a press or even from a photographic point of view.
Sure.
You know, like the kinds of pictures and the way somebody shot the first Obama inauguration versus the second.
Big gigapixel thing.
Yeah, exactly. And all
yeah,
that kind of
yeah.
stuff. It's like it's enough time that it's a little bit of a time capsule of the technology of the day, you know? Cause I remember when Obama first got in 2008, his official portrait that Pete did, was the first time it was shot.
What are you, first name base? Pete.
Okay, we all know. Okay. Pete Souza did.
My friend Pete.
was the first time a presidential portrait was done digitally. Was 2009.
Right.
You know, it's like, really? 2009? You know, look how far we are now. You know. Sorry, go ahead. You're talking about knocking the ball off.
It's just wild. I mean, and there's a nine-page, I think it's 8 or 9 page. I'll see if I can find it. Document about what you can and can't do, where you can and can't go, rules and regulations about, you know, what can and can't happen, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there are so many things going on. There are a lot of marches going on the actual day. There are a lot of marches going on the day after. The big, like, arguably the biggest one is probably the day after.
Right,
which,
right.
I, you know, I was talking with Fielding about that this morning. Is it more effective to be there the day of,
right?
Even if there are places you can't get because of security, but is it more effective to make your voice heard en masse on the day of and taking focus away from him and his
right.
regime, or is it more effective to have basically the run of the city the next day?
Well, I think they probably did it because they couldn't get permits anywhere near the mall for that day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
where are you going
to
do it?
This is the other
Arlington?
Thing that I don't understand. You have to have a permit to protest now?
Yeah. In fact, if you want to set anything up and have speakers and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could, if you and I and everyone who listens to the show, you know, if a few thousand people wanted to show up on the mall there's nothing they can do to stop us. But if we want right. to set up a stage and have one of us speak, you know, I think yeah. that's different. But yeah, I was discussing that last night as well. Yeah. Well, you know, does the 17 page booklet describe where the best place to see Three Doors Down is? Is there a really good positioning to hear Kryptonite?
1997.
Yeah.
yeah.
Sad.
It is.
It's kind of pathetic. It's like, really? You know, and I was reading in the newspaper this morning that the way they describe it is that the inauguration will be small and humble and workmanlike. You know,
right? You know, just like he, just, yeah. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Anyway, it's going to be
ridiculous. It's the amount of spin. I'm surprised DC doesn't just levitate with the amount of spin that's being thrown out.
Well, spin is the politician's game. You know,
ugh.
It's all about spin. I wonder how many photographs will be taken during the inauguration versus 4 years ago versus 4 years before then, just from everyone having even more cameras and taking right. more pictures, you know?
Right.
Or if the whole thing will go down a little bit just because people are sort of tired of taking pictures of everything, you know, will that ever happen? I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Right.
So you are or not going downtown on Friday?
Oh, I am. I'm going. There are a couple things that I will be attending. And then I will be attending the big march on and participating in the big march on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
On the 21st.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, here we go. I feel like we're at the top of a roller coaster.
You know, actually, it's funny you mention that, because that very language came up in the car today when I was dropping Fielding off. Is, you know, I do feel like it is. And so what do? Do you hold on for dear life, or do you just throw your hands up in the air and go, woo, and see what happens?
Well, it's going to happen whether or not you want it to or not, you know.
Sure. So
in some ways, you know, just, I guess you could throw your hands up and you know. Will there things that'll happen in the next few years that you and I will agree with? Probably the handful of things, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, no one's completely 100% diametrically opposed. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
The world will survive. The world will survive. Yes. But it doesn't bode well when you're anyway, they're not starting out on a great foot. No, they're not.
And my mother left the country as of 4 p.m. yesterday. So
right.
she got out just in the nick of time.
I'm debating if I want to renew my subscription to Pravda. So I can keep
Can you
up
get
the
a
date.
Subscription to Pravda in America? I wonder if you can.
I don't know.
Boy, Pravda means truth, doesn't it?
I'm not sure, actually. That would be ironic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the inside joke.
Yeah.
Lowercase T. It's Russian for truth.
Yeah. Okay.
When you call your newspaper truth, but it's full of propaganda. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. Hey, you know what? Completely unsolicited. I gotta just say.
Okay. What are you saying? What are you just saying?
I love my truck. I love it. I love it. I love it. Every time I drive
Why?
It, I love it.
What are you,
I just
what,
wanted
what are you
to
doing
say
with the
thank
truck?
You to Nissan. Well, you know, a couple months ago, Fielding and I bought an Xterra.
Right.
And it is, I just love it. I love being up that high. I love the feel of it. I love the sound of it. I love that it drives like a
you
truck.
You sound like a suburban mom from 2004.
Maybe. I just love it. Every time I like get in it, I'm like, rrr. Yeah,
how's the gas mileage on that thing?
You know, we drove it to South Carolina.
Okay.
And it was not bad, 24, 25 in there on the highway, which, okay. you know, is abysmal by, you know, Prius or Tesla or whatever standards. But
right.
this is a big, heavy, you know, it's the last of the breed of this kind of like SUV on a truck frame. So,
right.
you know, yeah. you're pushing a lot of weight around.
Yeah, you know. And you're more manly for it. I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you.
Have you actually hauled anything big in it to use for anything?
Just my excitement.
just your excitement. No, but you haven't gone and bought any 4x8 foot flats at
whatever? 4x8 won't fit in the back. You've got about 6 or so feet. Yeah, it's more tall than it is long.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know,
I guess you could strap stuff to the top.
Yeah, there's a rack on top, and you know, you can put a trailer hitch and, you know, tow things and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, it'll be nice if we get snow. It'll be nice to have 4-wheel drive and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
Anyway, it's just fun. It's as fun as sort of rediscovering a little car with a stick shift in a different way. Just because it's just different than what I've been used to.
Wait,
for
is
years.
It stick or is it automatic?
No, it's automatic. It's automatic.
Can you get stick cars anymore?
Yeah, my Honda's a stick.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, I love driving.
But how many years old was that?
2010.
Yeah. I mean, I like manual transmissions.
When we got the truck, I looked at a new Maxima, and they're 6-speed manual transmissions. They're brilliant.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. Anyway,
that was fun.
On talking vehicles. I don't know. Hey, I wanted to thank some listeners too. I've been looking for new. I've shot 4 rolls of film now so far this year,
okay,
and I'm loving it with the 124, the Yashica. And I've been looking for a Pentax 6.7, and a couple listeners have given me some other suggestions, including the Fuji 690, the wider one, which I like the 6x9 format. I mean, you
it's
like
2x3.
Yeah, you like the 6.45 format a little better, do you not?
Yeah, I like more squarish formats in general, just because, I mean, for my own personal work, it's just a matter of aesthetics. But for even for magazines and that kind of stuff, it's almost always cropped from a 2x3 frame, right? Because a page is not that tall or that wide,
right? So 6.45 is minimal cropping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mine is like 4x3, so it's way less cropping. So you sort of are getting the shot without throwing away a bunch of pixels for no reason.
Right.
I also aesthetically find the slightly more square thing a little more pleasing. Like it makes a little more sense to me. I've always felt that 2x3 is a little too wide in landscape for my eye. But everyone's got that thing. But
you've shot full frame for, you know, basically since you've been shooting pictures.
Yeah, and I've been cropping them for the last 4 years, you know. So I've been throwing away a bunch of pixels. So, but yeah, I mean, but that was just because that's the format that I had available, you know,
as much
as anything. So wait, they were suggesting the Fuji
6.45 and the 6.90, and then somebody else suggested the Tim Dobbs, as a matter of fact, said he loves the Mamiya 6.45.
Interesting.
Said he loves shooting with that. So I've been looking at those. The Mamiya 6.45s, you can get those for not a lot of money.
Yeah, or the 6.45N Pentax, right? Those are super cheap too. Like I've
right.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I don't like the 6.45, the grip on the earlier ones where it was at a weird angle because it was like angled forward.
Okay.
The later 6.45s, it's straight up and down.
Yeah.
And I also want a manual film advance. I don't want an electronic advance.
Sure. You know, one of the people who wrote into you said something interesting that I hadn't, of course I've thought of in my life, but I have not thought of since you've been looking at these cameras, is the idea of shots per roll.
Yep.
You know, the fact that, I mean,
6x9, you get 8.
Right. Do you really need a negative that's 6.7 or 6.9, or is 6.45 more than enough negative for you? And information wise.
Yeah.
And then at that point, why are you spending all of your, you know, wasting all that film?
Right. I like the 6, frankly, I like the 6.7 format. I like 6.9 too, but because it's the same aspect ratio as 35, and that's.
Right. 6.7, you get 10 shots a roll?
10 shots a roll.
10 shots a roll.
And then 6.45, what do you get, 15?
12? Yeah, I do. 12 is 6.6. It's either 15 or 16. No, maybe it's 18. God, I haven't owned 15. A 6.45 camera. It's somewhere
around
there.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 6.45, isn't it? 6.45 is the film's going vertically.
Yeah, it kind of has to rotate. Yeah, I have a 6.45... back for my RZ67 back in the day.
So that's another one that somebody suggested.
That's a truck of a camera. Actually, you know what? Your Xterra is perfect for that camera.
Barely.
You know what? I'm not
it's
even
not
kidding.
It's not the size, it's the weight.
That camera is a beast.
Is it really?
The RB and the RZ67 are beasts of cameras. Yeah. Yeah.
Are they? They're all metal?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some plastic involved, but there's a lot of metal involved. They're just big and heavy. And I mean, the viewfinder, the waist level and stuff on, say, the RZ is beautiful and it's big. And if you use it with a 6.45 back, they give you a mask to put in there. But I remember
what is it, slide in like a little dark slide type thing?
Yeah, does it sit on top of the glass, but underneath the viewfinder, something like that. But the thing that got me is that I owned the RZ67 and I owned a Hasselblad 500CM at the same time. This is like back in the day when I used to buy old cameras when you can get them for nothing.
Right.
And I had both of them there and I would shoot with both of them occasionally. In fact, some of the pictures from my first 365 thing were shot on the RZ just because I had it and I was shooting with it. But I remember holding them one day and the RZs weighed at least twice as much as the Hasselblad and twice as much volume as the Hasselblad for a negative that was 6.6 versus 6.7. You know,
right.
And I thought,
right.
Is that really worth twice just to get a little scooch more on one side? Like, that's crazy to me. It's actually one of the really good examples of international design philosophy. You know, the way a Japanese company would think of a big camera versus a Swedish or German company would think of a big camera. It's just very different ways of looking at it. But you can get both of them super cheap.
That's one of the advantages of something like the Fuji 6.45, where it's basically just sort of an inflated DSLR. You know, it's not much bigger than a DSLR in practice, really.
Yeah, and they're pretty cute, you know.
Yeah,
but they have manual film advance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like $271 for these things. That's nothing, you know. That'd be cute. The only thing is, I mean, do you care about changing your lens out?
No, I mean,
you'd
for years
fine
I've
with...
only used the one. I mean, this is so. What are these? 60 mils?
Yeah,
or 80
so it's a normal lens. Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be like a 30 or 40 field of view kind of thing.
Probably like a 45, close to a 50 actually. Yeah, it's not that bad.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Excuse me.
I wouldn't obsess. I think you should just buy. Here's the thing though. You could buy a few of these things and then just resell the ones you don't really want.
Exactly. And you're not going to lose a bunch of money.
Yeah. And you're talking $300 a camera. Buy five different ones and sell the other four, you know?
Right.
Or go to a swap meet and just play with other people's, you know? Cameras, that is.
Right. But thanks for clarifying that. I was like, wow, we go to the same kind of swap meets.
Randy Duchesne was over the other day and we were sitting and we were talking and just talking about our families and larger views of life and retirement and working and all that kind of stuff. And we were both kind of came to this conclusion, and it's funny because I was listening to an interview with John Larroquette yesterday that Marc Maron did.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point during the interview, he said to Larroquette, you know, oh, so, you know, yeah. And you're like, you're still working. He goes, yeah. What else would I do? You know? And it really jived with, you know, what I don't know what else I do with myself, you know, that kind of thing. And it really jived with Randy and I were just saying like, why? I don't understand the whole idea of like retirement. I could see like, okay, I'm not taking as much paid work because I don't want to deal with the clients as much, but I'm going to keep doing this because I love doing this and that's why I do it, you know? And it kind of got me thinking about the whole idea of, you know, you and I have discussed happiness on the show a lot and doing what makes you happy and that kind of stuff. And I'm wondering if happiness is sort of the byproduct of purpose. And really what it is that you have a purpose for doing what you do. You know, you have a love for something that gets you up in the morning. And it's that purpose that eventually when it's, what's the word I'm looking for? Consummated, as it were, gives happiness.
Well, it can give happiness.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think that's a possible byproduct. I don't think
but
that it is.
But is the purpose more important than the happiness? In some ways,
well,
I took pictures of a guy on Saturday who was a neighbor of my parents. Really sweet man, and he was telling us about when he was a kid and you know, they didn't have a lot of money and stuff. And he would go, he would have to go to the basement because it was all cold water flats up mm-hmm. here, you know, up in Westchester. And he used to have to go to the basement and heat up water in the morning so that he could carry water up to put in a bathtub so his younger brother and sister could take a bath, and then he would get to take a bath. But like, there was no option. He had to get up and heat up the water so his, you know, the kids could take a bath and stoke the fires and all the rest of it, you know. And even that menial work, because he's an older gentleman, but even that menial work like gives you purpose, even if it's menial work it sounds terrible to the modern ear, you know. And I don't know, I was just thinking about the idea of purpose. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I'm reading this Studs Terkel book, and it is, if nothing else, all about work and purpose and finding meaning or assigning meaning or gleaning meaning from work.
Right. Wait, are you reading Working?
Yes.
People talk about what they do all day. Okay, got it.
Yeah. And it is fantastic. And it's fantastic on a number of different levels. Number one, it's nice to read a conversation, and it's very much the way I approach my own work, for lack of a better word, rather than an interview. And there's a portion of the book early on where Studs makes the distinction between having a conversation and interviewing someone. And it's in the having of a conversation where people open up and feel like there's parity between subject and interviewer rather than a hierarchy.
Right. Yep.
And some of the ways that people talk about their work is, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of the jobs that they're talking about, we can't really relate to anymore.
Okay, yeah.
Because the working life in America has changed. And some of the stories foreshadow that change. Some of the stories are old enough to not reference that kind of change. And I'm talking about automation or just the types of industries that basically no longer exist in this country.
Sure.
And a lot of that is basically manufacturing and laborers and a lot of sort of union positions that just have been changed over the years.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of happiness is not really, if you go back far enough, it's contentment, it's pride, it's
yeah. And I see all those as facets of happiness in some way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Happiness is a modern invention.
Yeah, but it's not the sort of existential happiness. It's the happiness of like one of the guys was talking about. You know, he would love to see a 1 foot wide strip all the way up the Empire State Building engraved with the names of everybody that worked on the building.
Sure.
So that he could walk by with his son and point to it and go, there's your old man's name. I did that.
Right.
I can
right.
point to that and say, I did that, and I can take pride in that. And we don't do that anymore. We don't have that sort of one-to-one, I did this, I built this, I'm responsible for this. We are all just sort of cogs, you
sure.
know. And so I've been finding that interesting.
Do you think though that let's take your example of putting your names of everyone who built the building on the wall kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if that is what we crave as humans, being noticed? We want mm-hmm. not credit, but just sort
maybe
of
acknowledged.
Acknowledgement. Yep. Mm-hmm. There's the word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If the powers that be, not to turn this into a political thing, do that just because they know that's what we crave, and it's like, oh, well, you know, they want a thing on the wall with all their names. Okay, if that'll keep them be happy workers, let's do it. You know, that kind of thing. Is that different than them really doing it for because they believe that those people deserve their names on the wall? Or is it all the same because it has the same
result? I think it is different because it's not for management that the worker wants to see that. It's for himself.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah.
You know, there's that scene in Good Will Hunting where Will Damon is talking to Robin Williams about about, you know, wanting to lay brick and sure. and what's wrong with that? It's a noble profession. You're providing warmth for someone. And I think we have in many ways lost the ability to recognize that because so much of what we do is service based or just sort of shifting money around, shifting sure. services yep. around.
Yeah.
There is
virtual, you know, product.
Yeah. And we're having some work done on the roof. And it actually got me thinking about this over the weekend. We're having the flashing redone around the chimney because there's a leak, and I am not able. I don't have that ability, that skill, or the knowledge to go fix it.
Right.
My father did, my sure. grandfather did, but I don't.
Yeah.
And
the person theoretically that you're going to bring in even has more than any of those people because they've done it 100 times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, there is this. I almost lament the fact that I don't have that knowledge because I value knowledge like that. That sure. sort of it's almost folk knowledge, right? It's almost yeah.
It's becoming that.
Yeah, because these things are no longer valued like they once were. The ability sure. to do them is no longer valued like they once were.
How many people, you know, couldn't change an outlet in their wall? You know what I mean?
Right.
Which
I've done that.
Right. Exactly. Right.
That I can do.
Right. Or minor plumbing stuff, or right, you know, even the little corner set that I built. I basically built a wall and then bolted it to my wall. Most people wouldn't be able to do that, right. And I know because my father taught me how to do it. Whatever, you know. Right.
So there is a pride in accomplishment that I think transcends almost transcends happiness because it. Even if I did it not the way or not as well as someone else did it, I mean, I would want to do it well, but I know that I'm not going to do it as well as somebody with 40 years of experience doing it. But there is still a pride that I can feel in accomplishing that.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's definitely a sort of multiplicity of ways that you can look at it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it just semantics? Are we all talking about the same thing, or is there really a delineation between?
I look. The, I don't know. You know, as this is, I'm really going off the rails right now.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
The, you know, it's like I think I brought it up before, the Unabomber Manifesto, right? Which, you know, this crazy guy out in the woods killing people, bombing them. But like, what he was basically saying was, things have gotten too easy for humans that we're wired to find happiness in survival, and mm-hmm. and problems have become you can't touch them, you know, they're not tangible. So there, like that a lot of the sadness and overwhelming feeling of modern society has to do with the fact that things are in some ways too easy, you know. And obviously the guy's crazy, but there's a kernel of something interesting in there. You know, the idea that
how so?
Well, in the same way that you and I talk about how in some people's eyes a photograph doesn't exist until it's a tangible print, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, yeah,
which I'm more with than against, by the way.
Yes, and I understand that as well. I come down on the side of, wow, that gets really expensive very quickly if you shoot a lot. But yes, I agree. So in some ways, you know, you're talking about fixing things with your hands or working with your hands or wanting a manual camera that you have to crank the shutter, you know, crank the film advance manually. Mm-hmm. Part of that is this sense of like, I need to physically do the work so that I feel like I feel satisfied in having done the work.
Yes.
Even if the work could be automated, the game is not automation and making it easier. The game is in imbuing something with meaning.
Sure.
Even if the meaning
is
just...
I feel like I should earn that.
Exactly. Even if the meaning is flicking your thumb from left to right.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But and are we hardwired as humans to find that satisfying? You know, to some extent, I think that that's part of the reason why I'm just a little bit further down the road than you are, in the sense that that's part of the reason why I don't like EVFs or cameras that don't have electronic shutters. It's like I press the button, it doesn't feel like anything happens. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, even if it's ridiculous and we don't really need the mirror. Well, you know, you need the mirror if you want an optical viewfinder like that. But you know, even if there is arguably a quote unquote better way to do it, I like the fact that when I hit the thing, there's a mechanical shutter that opens the mirror goes up, a shutter opens and it closes and the mirror comes down, that like something felt like something happened in the real world. And it's not all just ons and offs and bits and bops in the ether, you know? So this whole sense of purpose for having a reason to wake up every morning and getting some sort of satisfaction out of that, you know, maybe satisfaction's another word too, that, you know, trying to find something in your life or in your work that makes you feel when you go to bed that you're excited to see what's going to happen tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that I struggle with or have struggled with in the past. Trying to keep the nihilist in the closet.
Well, and it's, you know, it's perfectly, I don't want to turn this into a, well, it's, you know, it's better to do, it's not a value judgment. It's not a value proposition. It's, you know, if for those of you who are listening, who for whom this is complete rubbish, and you're, you know, so long film and manual cameras, good riddance.
We'd love to hear from you.
Love that. Yeah, yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I love about where photography is at right now is you can do both. I can go out in my with my camera bag and yep. have my X-Pro in one slot and this, you know, 30-year-old mechanical beast in the other slot.
Yep.
And I can scratch both itches.
Yeah. 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 Well, like I said, you know, you're over there in film wanting to process your film by hand. I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know, I don't have time for scanning film or whatever it is. I want to take more pictures. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. so yeah, I'm somewhere along the line. And then there's some guy who has, you know, an iPad, and he uses it as like a big viewfinder, and he takes his pictures and he's perfectly happy, even though he only ever looks at them on his phone or whatever. Right. That, it's all along the spectrum, but it's like where it is on there, you find meaning and why is what's interesting to me, you know, assuming that you find that, I don't know. It's, there's this intangible that maybe I have to read this working book, because that sounds interesting the way he's talking about it.
Yeah. In fact, pause for a second. There's one spot. Let me go grab it. There's one spot okay. I want to touch. Hold on one sec.
Yep. Jeffrey's going to get a book. We'll probably cut this out.
Okay. Here, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but are we still going?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. It is about a search, too, for daily meaning as well as daily bread, for recognition as well as cash, for astonishment rather than torpor. In short, for a sort of life rather than a Monday through Friday sort of dying. Perhaps right. immortality, too, is part of the quest. To be remembered was the wish, spoken and unspoken, of the heroes and heroines of this book. There are, of course, the happy few who find savor in their daily job. The Indiana stonemason who looks upon his work and sees that it is good. The Chicago piano tuner who sees and finds the sound that delights. The bookbinder who saves a piece of history. The Brooklyn fireman who saves a piece of life. But don't these satisfactions, like Jude's hunger for knowledge, tell us more about the person than about his task? Perhaps. Nonetheless, there is a common attribute here. A meaning to their work well over and beyond the reward of the paycheck.
Right. Yep. I guess the question that I have about this is that obviously people still hunger for this. Some people still find it. you are reading about this stuff and looking at a book that was written, what, in the 70s or 60s, right? Somewhere back then.
It was I think it was, I mean, some of these stories date back to, you know, the 40s, because it was decades in the making.
Right.
But I think, let me see here. Yeah, 1972.
Yeah. So it's interesting even in that he was talking to people of another generation. By the way, did I discuss this last week about the whole generations thing? The baby boomers and all that stuff. Did I talk about that last week?
It's not ringing a bell.
It turns out that baby boomers started in January 1st, 46. Theoretically, okay. Like that's how people look at it. My father was born in 1945, which means my father wasn't a boomer. He was part of the silent generation, which I never heard of and I never thought about.
Well, it's because they were silent.
I couldn't even hear a word they said.
Right. They had nothing.
But I just thought that was kind of interesting. But, you know, but this Turkle's looking at talking to people of another generation over the course of decades, you know, compiling these into a book. And this is all meaningful today, but it is kind of where jobs are going in the future. I think this is one of those things that is getting taken out of them. It's like one of our listeners who's a friend of ours, you know, was working a job. And, you know, I said to him once, I said, you know, isn't it frustrating to work in a job where they're just trying to shave every tenth of a penny off of something to the point where there's no meat on the bone left to kind of get your teeth into, you know, where it's like, yeah, it's better for the company, but it makes working there miserable. It makes the customers miserable. It makes, you know, and he said, yeah, it's exactly what it's like. Right. So, you know, we think that efficiency and greed in the Gordon Gekko way will sort of solve all these problems, but I don't know that it will. And I don't know. I'm getting political today, but it's, I don't know. It's something I've been thinking about, trying to find places where people in today's world can do things that not only give them pleasure, but give their life meaning. And,
right.
And those jobs or careers are seem harder and harder to come by.
And I think you're right. I've got a whole slew of notes that I've been taking as I'm reading this. And underlining passages and writing in the margins. And while it may be incredibly presumptuous, part of me is inspired to pick up this mantle, to pick up where Studs left off and try and find exactly what we're talking about. Try and find, as we move into not only, you know, a new administration here in America, but a new era of automation,
sure.
A new era of what types of jobs are important, to pursue some of these questions and have some of these conversations about where meaning comes from,
yeah,
for the everyday worker, for the everyday person, yeah.
Comfort
creative.
Without meaning becomes Wall-E.
Yeah.
You know, involves all of us sitting around drinking Coke, watching Netflix.
Right.
But, you know, but that does not happy people make. You know, there has to be some sort of struggle, some dialectic to overcome, whether that's personal in your own head of how you see your own work or challenges in your,
sure.
in your job that you're, you know, a
and
problem
it can be a little
fix.
Victory.
Absolutely.
It can be drilling 250 perfectly aligned holes in a day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't
absolutely.
Have to be, you know, I change the opinion of, or, you know.
Right. But if drilling those holes becomes putting the piece into a jig where it doesn't move and then pressing a button and an automated thing goes and drills the hole, and you are essentially just a robot that can't be, they haven't made a robot that can do exactly what you're doing yet. For some weird arbitrary
But if
reason.
It is, then don't expect me to be happy at my job.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't, it's like, I know a lot of people really don't like their careers and I, while my career, I don't make, you know, $400,000 a year in my career. I like what I do and I never pick up my camera or my bag to go out to a shoot and think, oh God, I don't want to go today. I've never said that.
Right.
And I was up at my mother's house saying goodbye to her for a few months, you know, and we were talking
about a few months to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Jesus.
We were talking about this job that I had in high school where I worked at this place called East Hill Woods, which was like a old people sort of assisted living kind of place where they could come down to this dining room and have dinner. And it was a bunch of rich people who, you know,
that's where I remember you.
Yeah, exactly. Table 47, Jeffrey
Here,
Sidoris,
Sonny,
Jay Sidoris. And so I used to serve dinner to, you know, all these older people. But, you know, you've waited tables, right? You did that for a little while.
One of the favorite jobs that I've ever had was being a waiter.
See, I couldn't stand it because the only time I've ever done it, they would seat 5 4-tops in 3 minutes. And I had, you see what I'm saying? Like there was no, there's no rotation. There was no overlap to it. It was just sort of like, you need to get 36 soups out in 6 minutes, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I used to leave high school and go to this job. And the job, I mean, at the time, this is 92. I was making $10.50 or $11 an hour, which for a high school kid was good money in the early 90s. But I hated it. I had a hole, like that my stomach would wrench up. I would like feel sick going to work.
And I would imagine that even that good wage for then wasn't enough to fill that hole.
No, that did not offset that. I mean, I did it for you know, 6 months or a year or whatever, but like I would never do that job again. And part of the reason why I do what I do now is because I hate feeling that way. And I felt that way in other jobs, you know? And I can imagine if you feel trapped in something like that, which at a job that doesn't give you meaning, whatever it is, I could understand the sort of purgatory that feels like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know, going around in circles, but I thought it was an interesting discussion. And the idea of finding something that gives you purpose. So, I mean, look how many people retire and don't really have any purpose. And then they end up just sort of sitting around and kind of being, you know, dying young and all this kind of stuff. It's like, you stop working. You for a lot of people, that does rip out some sort of purpose and meaning in their life, you know?
Sure. Let's turn it back to the listeners. Guys, girls, what gives you purpose? What brings you happiness, and are they the same thing? And are those things tied to what you do, in quotes, I'm air quoting around my mic here, for a living? Or do you get those things elsewhere?
Yep.
Podcast it on takingpictures.com.
We should talk about one of our sponsors.
Yes. Well,
new sponsor today.
A new one.
And we had a nice little chat with these people the other day. That was fun, actually.
Did.
It was interesting.
Yeah. What's
that?
What am I? I'm not talking about my underwear again, am I?
No. We're talking about FreshBooks.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Because I'm wearing them just in case.
Jeffrey, when you're running your own agency, wrapping up one project while starting another means you'll need healthy cash flow to keep things moving. If you're waiting for a client's check to show up in the mail, slowing your business down, then it's time for FreshBooks. FreshBooks makes it ridiculously easy cloud accounting software for agencies and freelancers that'll help you work smarter, become more organized, and more importantly, get you paid quickly.
Ugh.
You hate waiting for money, don't you?
It is
the bane of a freelancer's existence.
Ugh. Chasing people down or sending those little, like this.
Hey, could you check on invoice 6673?
Yeah, sending those reminder emails is the worst part of being a freelancer, in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because you look at your accounting or you look at your balance and it's like an EKG. You know, there's no consistency to it because you're getting paid for these things, but then you're waiting on this and you're getting this and there's no consistency to it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah,
some people are net 30, some people are net 90.
Yeah.
Some people, I have some people that I work with that are phenomenal, that like I deliver a project and I get a PayPal notice within a couple hours saying, hey, you've got money. Right. So that's great.
That's kind of how it should be, honestly.
Well, with the amount of tools and the ease of which those tools function, yes,
yeah,
it should be.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that was cool about talking to the FreshBooks guys is you know, seeing how they've sort of mixed in all these different functionality in a dashboard that you don't have to have an accounting degree to figure out.
Yeah. Actually, the whole interface is pretty great. And it's apparently recently it's been rebuilt from the ground up, completely redesigned from the ground up and customized to built for the way you work. You're ready for the simplest way to produce, organize, and most importantly, get paid quickly, Jeffrey. I like the whole projects feature where you can have multiple invoices under a single project. You can get notifications. There's even a whole thing where it'll notify you, not normal, boring, you know, iOS notification kind of thing, but on your dashboard, it'll tell you sort of the people you should remind about the fact that they haven't paid in X days and whatever it is. And you just click and FreshBooks will send a reminder. You know, it's amazing. You can create and send professional looking invoices in under 30 seconds. You can see whether the person's seen it or seen the invoice. So if they go, oh yeah, I sent it to you. Well, I didn't see it. It's like, well, yeah, you did. You clicked on this link on Tuesday, right, the 22nd, right. You know, yes, you saw it. You can do multi-currency. So if you're working with somebody in Europe, which happens to me a lot of times where it's, you know, some magazine in Europe will say, hey, we love your picture of so-and-so. Can you send us an invoice? Which is a pain in the neck if you're doing it a lot of other ways. They've got award-winning support. They've got real live people, Jeffrey, who will answer the phone in 3 rings or less.
Yeah.
Online payments. Let me ask you something. Amazing.
One of the things that I dug in talking to them and kind of playing around, I am horrible about time tracking. I'm horrible about about keeping track of exactly how much time I spend on something.
Yeah, clicking the little timers to keep track. That's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, people will ask, well, how long did it take to do this? And I'm awful about it. I'm better than I used to be.
Right.
But it's one area where I definitely need.
You'd use the time trackers. That's pretty cool.
I think I would. I mean, I've got a couple on my menu bar that I have been using for a while now, but it's only been in the last probably couple of years that I've been really good about it.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, I just estimate, you know, it took me 5, 10 hours.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something around there.
They've also got an app where you can take pictures of your receipts and stuff and add them to a particular invoice for expenses, which is totally cool. You know, oh, I got to go to this thing. Oh, I'm getting lunch or the train tickets. Like, bleep, just, you know, put them right in there from your app. It's amazing. Yeah. So you guys have to go check out FreshBooks. To claim your month-long unrestricted free trial, go to freshbooks.com and enter "on taking pictures" in the "how did you hear from us" section. And they said it's very, very important that you type in "on taking pictures" in the "how did you hear about us" section, because then we'll get credit for having sent you along.
All right, so Fresh, go try it out. Go try it out. Show them some love.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
What else you got?
We got some stuff that you put in here. This guy.
Oh yeah, this was interesting. This guy earned more with his iPhone last year, sports photographer, than he did with his DSLR. Now, saying that you earn more with your phone versus your DSLR, okay, that's not really shocking to me. But when you tack on sports photographer,
sure.
That's where my head just kind of goes, wait a minute.
Well,
because you're shooting from so far away.
And looking at the pictures, he's obviously a different kind of sports. He's not a, you know, super long lens sports photographer. I mean,
no,
obviously his SLR, but he's taking a different kind of pictures with these.
It's a different kind of picture. And I think it's, I don't know, it's a little more exciting and personal, maybe exciting because it's personal or personal because it's exciting. I don't know, but it's different.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know. I really like the work. So I thought it was an interesting article to put in here.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link in the show notes so you guys can check this out. It's a guy by the name Brad Mangan. Mangan?
Right.
Is that how you'd pronounce that? One part that was interesting to me, though, he said, The request was made by my editor, Peter Brule. Peter had been following my iPhone work on my Instagram feed, wanted to do a fun layout in the magazine with a grid of Instagram squares. So there is a certain amount of, there's novelty in the fact that we can do a grid of small pictures kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they were going for in shooting it, which doesn't explain it, but it's just sort of like, oh, okay, I see what they were going for here. That's that's kind of, it's an in thing right now, so let's make that happen. And the pictures are really nice, although also heavily processed. All of these look like they were, you know, he messed around with them a lot in a phone, which is...
okay, that's fine, but...
They're great.
Okay, just as an aside, and we don't have to talk about this right now, but I would like to talk about it.
Okay.
When do we get past the point of tacking on, but heavily processed? Like, so what?
When
do we get past the purity of it's only a photograph if no human, you know, nothing has been altered?
Well, no, I'm
not saying that's what you meant. There is a thing about that where, oh, it's processed.
Yeah. Well, I think that when it comes to a lot of images out of phones, it feels like it wasn't like the look of it or the tones and stuff weren't that great out of camera. So people tend to choose to or have to do a lot of posts to sort of turn it into something that looks like it wasn't just shot in a phone. You know what I mean? It wasn't just a snapshot from a phone. So I think that part of it has to do with trying to make a shot from a phone look like something a little more gritty or artistic or what have you. And I mean, we've been doing this all for years, right? It's like the toning and the sharpening and the black and white and the, you know, all these different things that we do in our phones.
Right.
So I
feel like this guy has approached it, and reading the article and thinking about this, he's approached it. And
my iPhone is not a gimmick.
Yeah, my iPhone was not a gimmick. It was a real tool that allowed me to make great pictures that could be delivered in a timely manner to help the tour get images from the event out to the world.
Yep, so absolutely.
What's the problem? What's the solution?
Oh, yeah.
I I don't know.
I don't think that there's necessarily a problem, but I do think that it is interesting how we tend to look at pictures and we can almost tell like, oh yeah, those look like iPhone shots, especially have a certain look and feel to them. And it's not a bad aesthetic, you know, like looking down these, they feel like shots from an iPhone. Like a lot of people do the silhouetting stuff because there's no dynamic range in a lot of these shots. Right. So that's a big thing. Oh, we'll shoot silhouettes. We'll shoot it at sunset. We'll turn things black and white and make it gritty. We'll do, you know, these kinds of things. So
I don't wholeheartedly agree. I mean, okay. I agree to an extent, but I don't agree that I think it's a little presumptuous after the fact to scroll down and go, well, these are all obviously iPhone shots.
I don't think all of them are, but I think a lot of phone shots have a certain feel to them. Mm. Some of these down the bottom, actually, the best shot in the bunch, actually, I think is that, one of the guy about two thirds of the way down with his bat behind his head, number 66, looking up like low angle, black and white shot. Like that's a great shot, regardless of, you know, whatever you're shooting it on. And obviously this man is a very skilled photographer, which is the most important thing, you know, that these look great, period. And if you can send them off to somebody, you know, instantly, that's also has huge value.
Sure.
I mean, so yeah. It really is interesting. There's also the idea that yes, these look fine here, and yeah, they'll look fine 3x5 in a magazine, but they don't look that great blown up big. You know, at least none of my phone shots ever do. Whenever I make them, I've printed 8x10 and it looks pretty good. But if I go much beyond that, it sort of falls apart. Now, how often does anybody need anything more than 8x10? Absolutely. You know.
Sure, especially in the context of a magazine.
Yep. 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 In the same way that iPhone video footage, you know, doesn't have a lot of room for color grading. It's like, if you like the way it looks out of the phone, great, more power to you, go. It's great. But if you send that to somebody to do anything to, or try to color correct it to match other stuff or anything like that, it falls apart real quick.
Sure.
You know? So there are limitations to all this stuff. It just depends on whether those limitations are meaningful to you. It's interesting because this weekend I was up at my mom's. I didn't have a laptop, or didn't have a computer that I could bring with me, to edit my photos for the weekend for my 365 thing. And I ended up buying, the Lightning 2 SD card reader.
Right.
You ever had one of these SD card readers for your phone?
No.
Okay. So I set my camera has two SD card slots. I made one of them raw and I had it put... ready for this, Jeffrey? Small JPEGs, which are 22 megapixels.
Right.
On the other card, and I sucked them in, and I edited them in Lightroom Mobile, which is actually really nice. I would recommend Lightroom Mobile. I mean, it's not Lightroom, but it's Lightroom. You know, you can affect these things and change them. And if you pay for the Adobe Suite and stuff, you can log on in the app and get access to sort of a masked versions of things. So you can sort of do layers and that kind of stuff, which totally worked fine for my purposes. And when I got home, I reprocessed them in Capture One to look pretty close to the low res versions I did in Lightroom, and they look great too. But it was sort of one of these things, like in a pinch, I take it on the big camera, pop the SD card in the phone, import them, and I can do whatever I want with them, you know. Totally worth $30, and it totally worked. So I was impressed by the by the workflow. Wasn't that bad, you know. Remember when they first announced sort of importing stuff from SLRs and stuff and other cameras, they said they were limited to like 18 megapixels or something like that. Do you remember that whole thing?
On the phone, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that still the case? Is it down-resing the thing that I'm importing, or I couldn't find it anywhere?
I have no idea.
Because the smallest ones I can make are 22 megapixels. Actually, there's an extra small, but that's like 1,000 pixels, which is like too small, you know? Anyway, it was pretty cool, and I just wanted to put that out there and say that is a totally reasonable thing to do.
I know that Apple just or if they haven't done it, it's immediate. They're upping the file size limit on Apple TV to 4 gigs.
Oh, are they? I also think that they need to what was I going to say? Something about Apple. You just said that, and now I lost my train of thought.
Apple TV 4 gig upgrading.
Yeah. Oh. I'll mention this now because it's kind of interesting. My mother had, so Conrad has a 13-inch Air from 2011, a Sandy Bridge 13-inch Air, and she had 128 gig SSD in it, and she's been bumping up against 128 gigs for the last like 2 years, like where we have to go in and delete a bunch of stuff every once in a while so she could record her podcast and that kind of stuff, because she's like right up against it, because she's got 40 gigs of music and 30 gigs of photos from her phone that get brought onto it every time she syncs. So it just keeps getting closer and closer to the danger zone.
Right.
Danger zone. There you go.
Yeah, thanks.
So I looked on Otherworlds Computing, Mac Sales.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And they had a replacement SSD at 240 for $124, which is less than it used to be. It used to be like $200, $250 for these things. And I don't know if it's just because it's such an old laptop that they're sort of getting rid of the old ones or whatever. So I bought one of those.
Why couldn't you use like one of the Evos? Are they too big?
Oh, you can't fit. It's this weird proprietary blade thing,
yeah,
for those,
is.
Right? So you have to buy very specific ones. So I bought this thing, popped the new one in there, and Macs of recent vintage of the last few years, you can hold down Command R, and it'll go into internet recovery mode where it actually downloads the OS off the internet. So I reinstalled the OS, but here's the weird thing, Jeffrey. It reinstalled Lion, which is the OS that was on this machine originally. I'm surprised.
Good call.
Like, why does it do that versus just pulling down Sierra or whatever, right?
Oh, that's funny.
Right. Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, that's very odd. Anyway, long story short,
Wait, did you know that it was installing Lion before the install finished?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. It didn't open up and I was like, Lion?
Yeah, no, you're like, what?
It was a Lion installer and it was fine.
How funny.
I put that on there. I downloaded. I actually put LCAP. I didn't put Sierra because that's what was on it before. And then I had backed up her old drive into a sparse bundle on an external disk. And I went in there and pulled over all her photos and all her stuff and apps. But I thought this would be a good opportunity to not just clone it back over, but to do a nice clean install, you know? But it totally worked and it sort of revitalized this machine. And now it's a SATA 6G connection in there. Although the old drive only did like 150 megs a second, the new one does 250 writes and like 360 reads. So it's a much faster SSD to boot. So anyway, just an interesting thing to save the cheerleader, save the world.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway,
hey, I just pasted in that Secret Service document into your Skype.
Oh, perfect. Box. Okay, I'm gonna add that to the show notes.
It's kind of funny.
Is it Secret Service or is it Trump's private security service? Is his Royal Guard that he's
secret? Okay, yeah, the Royal Guard.
Do they wear red suits? Those like red
things with little CCCP badges on them.
One other thing, Gene Cernan, who was the commander of Apollo 17, and arguably the final man to walk on the moon in 1972, died yesterday. I just wanted to mention it.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, I did. You know, that's a good question. Let's see. What does it say? 82 years old.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary that was on Netflix for a while, which you can find. I'm going to put a link in the show notes called The Last Man on the Moon.
Yep.
Gene Cernan is an interesting guy. And everyone I've met always kind of like rolled their eyes and are like, oh my God, Gino was such a pain in the ass. Because that's he was very cocky and very sort of, you know, headstrong and whatever it is. But, you know, definitely one of the breed of those guys, right?
Right.
And also, if you watch From the Earth to the Moon, which I do believe is still on Netflix, which is the sort of fictional recounting of, it's a HBO miniseries from the late 90s, which is totally worth watching the whole thing of, which talks about the whole Apollo.
There's a bunch of stuff on Amazon Prime that's Apollo and space related that's free for Prime subscribers right now.
Here's my question, Jeffrey, is why is it that we look at these pictures and a lot of the pictures of Gene and a bunch of the other people are still sort of emblazoned into the memory of people, right? You know, the Earthrise and, you know, Buzz Aldrin standing on the thing. The thing is that by Apollo 17 and 16 and 15, they had a video camera, a TV camera on the rover driving around with them, and not a lot of people watched. And there's still footage of them walking around, but why is it that we find these still images even more captivating than we do the footage of men, you know?
I don't know. That's a good question. And I don't have a good answer for it. But I myself am more filled with wonder, I guess, at the stills than I am the video.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's really interesting because you can watch, you know, tens of hours of footage of these guys walking on the moon in the early 70s. And the pictures are so much more interesting to me. It's the sense of wonder, right? That's you hit it.
Yeah. Maybe.
Sometimes too much information actually detracts in a weird way.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah.
You know, because I like you, I've watched, you know, a ton of these clips, and I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's amazing. You know, it's pretty soon. I think, God, I don't know how many are left. Maybe six, I think, are still alive now. There aren't that many of the guys left, you know, and I say guys because they were all men. They happen to be all men, but you know, there will come a time in the next few years, Jeffrey, where we as humans will have walked on the moon, but none of the people who did it or were involved in it or what have you are alive anymore. And do you feel like we've dropped a mantle of some kind, like stepped back too much?
I think I mean, in a nutshell, I think stepping away from our commitment to space exploration, is a step backwards. I mean, and it certainly from the standpoint of understanding our place in the universe and understanding more about the solar system and just, I don't know. Watch that Kennedy speech where, you know, we choose to go to the moon.
To go to the moon.
Not because it is easy, because it is hard.
Yeah.
And granted, I'm not saying that everything we do is easy, but publicly, that call to action, that public call to action from our president at the time was inspiring.
Yep.
And I don't feel that we are inspired much by our leaders.
Well, I mean, you could argue that was a lot of what 2008 was about, right?
Absolutely.
The whole hope thing.
A lot of people at the time, I remember speaking to a lot of people who remembered Kennedy firsthand, and for them, for a number of them, the swell of not necessarily nationalistic pride, but just what we could do together was very similar.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's sad. It makes me you know, I've met and shook hands with I think four or five of the guys who walked on the moon, and it is sad to know that these people are dying. It's like you could argue against it, but my argument would be that us walking on the moon, yes, it was expensive, yes, it was dangerous, yes, it was all these things. You could argue that there weren't any specific tangible reasons why we should do it and all the rest of it. But at the same time, I feel like in some ways it was the best thing we've ever done as humans that didn't involve blowing people up, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like
see that.
We
sure.
put a lot of money, we put $100 billion into putting guys on the moon just to see if we could, because, mm-hmm. and that gets back to the beginning, right? It's like this sense of purpose and satisfaction. And like, we're going to take on this challenge and we're going to meet it. And that's going to imbue us with something we wouldn't have had if we just sat here and looked at the moon from the ground. And there's something to say for just doing stuff.
You know, I agree. Yes. one of the other things we talked about over the weekend was the idea of deciding versus actually doing. And you know, we put a lot of weight on, I've decided to do this, I've decided to do that. Well,
yeah. Do it.
I've decided lots of things, but yeah. I haven't done them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Make deciding the gateway to doing, because without it, it's empty.
Yeah. There's an old adage that this old Vermonter guy, kid I knew, he used to talk about his grandfather. He said, the only difference between thinking it and getting it done is doing it.
Right.
You know, it's like, just do it. What are you going to do? Let's talk about our second sponsor and then we'll get on to our final stuff today. Is that good?
Sure.
Squarespace.
Yep.
You like Squarespace. I do
like Squarespace. I just redid my site.
Yeah.
On Squarespace.
Yeah. Since the last week one or
no, just
the last
no,
week.
Last okay. week. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. It lacked purpose. It lacked direction.
Pizzazz.
And it lacked. well, come on. Let's face it. I've always had pizzazz. But you know, Squarespace is interesting because what it does exceedingly well.
Right. Yeah. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a team of very serious people over there to make this stuff actually work. This episode of On Taking Pictures is brought to you by Squarespace, the simplest way for anyone to create a beautiful landing page, website, or online store. Easy to use tools and templates. Squarespace helps you capture every detail of what drives you, because if it's worth the effort, it's worth sharing with the world. You guys know this stuff. Professionally designed, your stuff will look professionally designed regardless of skill level, because they have professionally designed templates and things that they use. And you can code them without coding. You can mess with them and customize them to look different than everyone else's in a way that'll set your site apart. If you want to get in there and code a little bit, you can go dump in a little CSS. You could go in there and get into their, what do they call their developer tools? Is that how they say
it? Yep.
But you don't have to. You can just drag and drop your images and your text and move things around. They got intuitive and easy to use tools. You need a calendar in there. You drag the calendar widget in there, that kind of thing. You get a free domain name for a year when you sign up for a year. So, you know, go buy, you know, SidorusRememberskennedy.com and
taken.
And you can, you too can have a domain for a year. So start your free, what? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Start your free. Go ahead.
Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP to get 10% off your first purchase to show your support for On Taking Pictures. We love Squarespace and we thank them for their support. What were you going to say?
Well, I've been messing with the calendar feature to create kind of a booking session calendar for recording episodes of PD, where I can I can send a guest to a particular page, and they can see what's available, and they can book that session.
Okay, is it working out?
Well, I don't know. I'm still tweaking it.
It's
in development. But here's what I would like to say to Squarespace. Squarespace,
yeah.
please think about it. I know this has been a request for a while, but the ability to duplicate events or to have recurring events,
okay. yep,
would be a phenomenal addition, and in some ways, a very basic addition that should be there, because right now the way you have to do it is, let's say you have something that occurs every Friday.
Sure.
Well, you have to go in and create a new event.
Yeah. Or every Tuesday morning.
Friday. Or every Tuesday morning. Come on, guys. Recurring events, simple. Simple,
right,
simple,
right,
simple.
Right, right, right.
And the ability to duplicate events, that would be great. You can there's a little bit of a workaround. What I've done is I have basically Mondays and Fridays that I have standing sessions to record. So I've created a whole month's worth of events, and what I do is I just change the dates as that Monday passes.
Oh, you change the date, push it forward.
Yeah, change the date, push it forward, which is kind of kludgy. It would be nicer to be able to say, look, here's a recurring event for Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that kind of thing. So that would be my request. But other than that, it works beautifully. And what's cool about it is it looks the same as the site. I mean, it's all integrated, so you're not having to like put in an iframe or do
some weird wonky thing.
Yeah, embed tag.
Sure.
And it'll interface directly with your iCloud calendar or your Google calendar. So if somebody does book the session, they can just click Google calendar. It adds it to their calendar. Boom.
Perfect.
Done.
Yeah.
I have those two little additions.
I got to play with the calendar feature. You know, even like booking people for this 365 thing, you know, I've started really talking to other people and setting dates and that kind of stuff. And God, now I'm thinking back to 10 years ago, and it's kind of like, well, there's got to be a better way to do this. And there probably is a better way to do it with Squarespace. So I'm gonna have to check out
if you need something more sort of robust, like if you need to use like Doodle or Acuity or something like that, there's integration between different packages. So you can integrate a proper sort of, you know, booking an events calendar right into Squarespace if you choose to. I just wanted a way that looked a little more seamless to the rest of the site.
No, and seamless is what you're all about. So I'm all for that. I like I too like things to look proper.
Right. I want it to look the way I want it to look.
Yeah, you do. You want to go to the group?
Yeah, let's go to the group. Dennis Skyum, terrific skylight, Copenhagen City Hall. What a beautiful, beautiful building. And I love the perspective.
Really wide.
Yeah. What did you use on that, Dennis? Podcast it on taking pictures, or just leave it in the notes there.
Almost looks like it could be like an iPhone with a fisheye lens.
Yeah, or just a really super, like a, you know, 6 degree, you know, 6 millimeter.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. Super wide.
Nicholas Govis, typography. I love that. It reminds me of, I was watching a documentary about
good right now.
Hoffler and Frere Jones. In fact, it might have been in Helvetica. It might have been a portion of Helvetica when Hoffler and Frere Jones were still together. And they were building a database of signage all around Manhattan before they sort of went away. So I love this kind of thing. Nicholas, what did you do to straighten it out? Did you just see it straight on? Were you able to get that perspective? Did you correct it in post? How did you do it? Because it looks terrific.
Yeah, he's looking. He's coming a little bit from the bottom, right? Because you can see the bottom edges of, the overhang.
Right. But it's really nicely done. So what did you do? What do you got?
I really like Mario Mirabile. God, the looking up that building inside
cool.
the atrium.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, in Europe,
I like the reflection on his feet too.
Yeah. In Europe, there's laws that say that you actually have to have access to open air from your office. So you can't have like an interior office with no windows or sunlight.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of buildings have these like cores of light in them, because then it allows them to sort of double the amount of space that they can do. It's kind of
that's a neat thing.
See,
Todd Schick,
there is a law that
old cars
that doesn't make sense for money wise, but it does make sense for the happiness of workers wise.
You know? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Todd Schick skylight in the RV. You like RVs?
RV,
how do you feel about RVs?
I love RVs. We are planning. Not planning is probably a strong word. We have been discussing doing a week-long RV road trip, Fielding and I, through the Southwest.
Just a week?
Well, yeah, maybe.
Go for longer than that.
So like flying into Vegas,
yeah.
Rent an RV, and then tool around for a week.
Basically what I did in the fall, just with an RV versus a small car. Yeah.
Right.
Benedict Kemmerer over in Munich. Nice shot with these Samsung S6.
Nice. Peter Geyser, nice one. Yep. Light through the flag there. That's nice.
A lot of skylights are all over the place nowadays. Oh, I like Timoteo.
We have to have ours replaced, actually.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that last week.
Yeah. So they have to order it.
Look at Timoteo's picture of the reflection of the sky in the ground.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a nice shot. All right. So what else?
Matthew Stodden put up isolation, but you know, that could be looking up through a skylight.
Could be. Yeah. Triple hashtag.
Yeah. I don't know about this. I'm reading this book on graphic design.
Okay.
And I think it is, I'm going to do a review of it because I think this book is a book that every photographer should read. It's a very easy read. It's a book by one of my favorite book/graphic designers. But I think graphic design in many ways parallels photography beautifully in terms of the skills, direct application of the skills from one to the other, in terms of composition and color and visual tension. And if you're a street photographer, then typography, Matthew Govis, that plays into it. So I was thinking about if I know several people who are doing photo books.
Sure.
So the assignment is I was thinking about book cover. If you were going to produce a photo book, the cover, you know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover, except you kind of can.
People buy a book by a cover.
Right. So my thought was, if you were going to create a photo book cover, what image would you put on the cover?
Okay.
And bonus points if you actually use typography to create a title or a byline. But that's extra. But what do you think of that? Book cover.
Book cover, sure. Book. It's also
what would
fun
be
saying
on the cover of a cover. Book that you produce?
Yeah. I want to see what people come up with.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, it's like some people will shoot landscapes, some people shoot streets, some people shoot portraits, some people shoot whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know what they choose to be the image that speaks for them says a lot.
Yeah, and is it a full bleed image? Is it inset? Is there no photograph on the cover at all?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Have fun with it. What do you got? Photographer of the week. This is
via Monica G. Twitter a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think it was last week, 2 weeks ago. Luigi Ghiri, who is a was an Italian photographer. Often Kodachrome guy who is often compared to like the Eggleston school of mm-hmm, photography.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. This is cool stuff. I've never heard of him before.
But that was because he was in Italy was not ignored by the general world, but like it was more difficult for him to get noticed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously very much if you flip through these, Jeffrey, very like he's into symmetry and graphics and silly kind of funny things.
Shot of the two spotlights is really cool.
Yeah, there's a picture of a lights. Painting of a brick wall, but it's like on a brick wall, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Or the shot of all the postcards and all the racks, you know, and the white racks going over the edge of it. So he's obviously sort of, he's silly and playing with ideas and things. Apparently his book Kodachrome, which was from 1978, he self well self-produced he and his wife and another guy started a little imprint, and this is one of their books, and they talk about how difficult it was to create a book that the printing process wasn't that great in 1978 to do your own photo book.
Right.
So the limitations of the printing made things look a little muddy and muddled and that kind of stuff. And that the recently another Mac, who was one, I guess, a publishing company over in England, did a reprint of his thing in modern technology, which is actually pretty darn cool, which you can get a copy of. Interestingly enough, in Time Magazine, there's a review I found from 2013 of the re-released edition of Kodachrome, where the guy reviewing it basically didn't like the book, which I thought really interesting. He said, being that I approach most photography, my own and that of others, knowingly comfortable to be trapped within a labyrinth of illusion, aesthetic, style, and photography is the language of metaphor. Kodachrome is a deck stacked against me. It stands as the antithesis to my own practice, where the visual component compels you to explore the relationship to the image before you. I'm like, yikes.
Scathing.
But I think the guy's work is very interesting, especially when you look at it from the point of view of when it was done.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You know, it's a completely different thing. And what Italy felt like in the 1970s and late 60s, you know. Although from what I understand, he didn't really get into photography until a few years later in his life, not until like he was 30 or so. So I have a little bit in common with him in that way too, that I find interesting.
Hey, speaking of Kodachrome. We talked about Ektachrome coming back, right? Last week?
Yep.
So Ektachrome's coming back. Apparently, further to that, Kodachrome is in very large quotes, looking into what it might take to bring Kodachrome back. Or Kodak, not Kodachrome. Kodak is looking into.
That would be very interesting. The thing about Kodachrome is the processing is very complicated. It's like six steps or something, right, that it has to go through.
And Duane's probably got rid of all their gear.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the only way you could probably do that if you were Kodak would be to set up a lab at Kodak and have people ship it in.
Yeah.
You know, basically do it the way they did it. Isn't it funny? Everything goes around in circles, Jeffrey. Basically do it the way Kodak did with the original Brownie, right? Which is send the camera in, we'll pull the film out, process it, put new film in, and send the whole thing back to you.
Right. Send your roll of Kodachrome in. We'll send you back slides and another roll of film.
Yeah. Which is probably what they'll end up doing if they do it at all.
Or send it back on a thumb drive or something. Right, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
A little Kodak branded thumb drive.
But it is kind of a waste to start a whole chemical process and have a bunch of labs around the country do it when the numbers can't be that huge of people going to be using that, you know.
Sure.
So you can still
get E6 chemistry, so that's a little bit easier.
Right, which is why the Ektachrome. Right, because the Velvia and Provia, and there's still a few out there.
Right.
But anyway, Luigi Geary, thank you, Monica, for sending that one in. He seems very interesting and died fairly young, from what I read. He was born in 43, died in 92, so he was what, 39 years old? No. 49 years old. 49. Yeah, that works out.
I'm 49.
Well, then, yeah, imagine dying today. That would suck.
It would definitely suck. I don't need to get spun up over that now. Jesus.
You got anything else?
Nope.
All right. Let's wrap this thing up. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I don't want to know.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com, 347-687-9411 if you want to leave us a voicemail. At Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris, and if you want to follow my new thing, Wadman365 on Instagram. And anything else?
Why did you do that? Why didn't you just tag it Wadman365? Because you're posting like the new stuff there, and then you're posting old stuff like the initial ones, and you're why are you confusing people, Bill?
I wanted a feed of just the new stuff, just so everything in the feed was one a day. So I made a new one. Last week I reshot somebody I shot 24,000 years ago, and I was trying to find a way to reference the old picture, and I thought, I'll just put the old picture in my normal feed. They say consistency is what it's all about on Instagram, so I'm going to try an account that is hyper consistent, you know, one a day, one portrait a day, different person every day.
Right.
There will be 365 things in there.
Have you given any thought to what you're going to do at the end of it?
Like with the
pictures?
Don't
tell me. Just have you given any thought to it?
The last day or what I'm going to do with the pictures when I'm done?
With the pictures when you're done.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. I like that picture of James O'Connell. He looks like James O'Connell.
Yeah, somebody said, is that really his name or is that the only name that somebody like that could have?
Yeah. I mean, if you pan down, he's got like a bottle of Guinness.
Exactly.
And there's a sheep behind him just off camera.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, he was a very, very sweet man. So, yeah, it's fun. All right, well, then we will see you all next week. That'll be fun.
Yep, go do your thing. We'll talk to you post-inauguration. That's going to be weird.
During the Trump era.
Oh.
All right, Jeffrey, you will survive.
I will.
Maybe.
As long as I know how to love.
Oh, God.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Say, will leave me out.